Unfiltered, the official Sunderland AFC podcast.
Hello everyone and welcome to SCFC Unfiltered. Today we've got a very special guest, the chief sports writer for the Northern Echo. Scott Wilson's here. How you doing, Scott?
I'm very well, thank you. That sounds good. Special guest.
Well, you know, normally it's just footballers and stuff like that, you know. So I guess the premise of the get-together today, Scott, is to preview what is another big game down at Wembley for Sunderland. We'll look at a little bit of how we got here. We'll, of course, look closely at those semi-final games as well. Danny's here as well. Danny, it's been, a bit of a nervy time to get here, but we got the job done in the end to a certain extent. You know, they're at Wembley.
Yep, they got there in the end, and they had to go on a run to get there as well, didn't they? You know, that good run since Alex Neil came into the job, battled away and secured a playoff place. And then you go into those playoffs and coming up against Sheffield Wednesday, a team in form as well, like the other two teams were as well. But we get through that, get the job done, and now it's been a long wait, hasn't it? It's 12 days since we played Sheffield Wednesday in that second leg until we step out onto the pitch at Wembley. In a way, I think it's a good thing. With one or two lads coming back from injury, Nathan Broadhead, he's one obviously that the fans will be keen to see out there, certainly on the starting lineup, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Hopefully he pulls through in time for that. But yeah, it's just into that build-up week now, isn't it? Looking forward to the game.
Scott, before we get going, just tell people who may not know your name how much you cover Sunderland, why you cover Sunderland, and who you cover Sunderland for.
Yeah, so I'm at the Northern Echo. I've been there for my sins since 2004 now, so an awful lot of ups and downs in that time. We cover Sunderland, Newcastle and Middlesbrough, so I kind of swap around between the three, and I would watch, I would say, probably two-thirds of the games of all three of the clubs kind of through the season. So it's been, as it has been for the rest of the lads, it's been a lot of trekking up and down and around the country, but it certainly feels like it's worth it when you get a trip like this weekend, which is going to be great, isn't it?
And you've seen Sunderland for a few seasons, lots of years probably now, but what's different this time around, do you think?
I think it does feel different going to Wembley this time. I think a lot of the players have said clearly the momentum going into the playoffs has been different this time. Certainly the first season under Jack Ross and then last season, it had stuttered a bit towards the end of the season for various different reasons. You know, I think partly form had dipped, partly I think sometimes as well the managers had chosen to kind of loosen off a bit towards the end of the season because Sunderland had been in the playoffs two or three games beforehand, so there was a bit of chopping and change of the team, which I don't necessarily think worked in those years. Clearly that didn't happen this time because Sunderland had to keep winning right at the end just to get into the playoffs, so I think that momentum carried through. I think there's a good blend in the squad this time. I think, you know, there's the kind of vibrancy of youth with your Jack Clarks and your Patrick Roberts, who were obviously so important in that semi-final second leg. But then I think you've also got, you know, a really good spine this time. You know, your Bailey Wright, your Corey Evans, Ross obviously up front. So I think the blend feels good this time. But Sunderland being Sunderland, once that game starts at Wembley, the butterflies will still be there. And listen, anything can happen, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Danny, are you coming from a similar, you know, point of view of Scott there in terms of how we've got here and this time around?
Yeah, I think so. And I was thinking that, yeah. If you look at the two previous sort of campaigns, really, where we fell short, it was in our hands, really, wasn't it? I think you look at last year, really. I remember sort of Easter time, went to Peterborough. I think we got the draw there. We're still right in amongst it for automatics. And then we fell away, bad running results. Whereas this time, as we just said there, Alex Neil's come in with, 15 unbeaten, I think, now. So you've got that winning mentality and certainly not getting beat. Yes, we've drawn a few games as well, but we're solid at the back, you know, churning out clean sheets. And that's what you build your base off, really, going forward. And we've obviously at the other end of the pitch as well, you know, when we've got these players on their game, Broadheads, Pritchard, Embleton, and the two that were involved in the goal at Sheffield Wednesday on either flank. So if you've got these players on their game, we're going to cause any team's problems.
It's felt like knockout football for a little while, kind of, hasn't it? That Rotherham game felt like almost a knockout game. The Morecambe game, all right, in the end results went, but it kind of felt at the start of it like it was a knockout game. So there's been that feel around for a little while now.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, we've had to graft to get there. That's the thing. Usually, you know, in the playoff places, you might get one or two teams, certainly one that's fell away from the automatics, as we've mentioned there, had a bad run, then they've dropped into it. But all four teams that have been in there are the four teams in form, I think, coming into it. And Plymouth, yeah, unfortunately for them, dropped out. You know, they've been right in amongst it all season. Tough run of fixtures caught up with them in the end, didn't it?
Yeah.
Fell short on the last day of the season. But no, we've got there. I think, you know, confidence has got to be there back in the lads, and that's football, isn't it? When you're in that bad run of form, the confidence saps away from you quickly, but you can get it back as quick as going the other way with the running results, performances, and just being solid. And I think that's what Alex Neil's brought since he's come into the club. We've been difficult to break down at the back, not give away some cheap goals, have we, really?
Yeah.
You look at Sheffield Wednesday's goal, it was well whipped from their point of view. Mm-hmm. Great little ball from Barry Bannon. Obviously, you can dissect it from our point and think, could we have done better? Possibly, but that's a quality goal from their point of view.
Definitely.
But the way we reacted after going behind, you know, we could have gone under there, their crowd giving that lift, you know, 30,000 Sheffield Wednesday fans in Hillsborough. But the way we reacted was great. He didn't make any changes either, did he? You know, I think a few fans were perhaps looking, are we looking a little bit leggy? Do we need to freshen it up? But he stuck with them. And as we said there, Jack Clark down the left-hand side, Patrick Roberts getting across his man, got the job done.
I think that is a difference to the other years, that the defence feels like a real strength this time, whereas I think in probably both the other playoff campaigns, you felt that Sunderland always carried a threat going forward, but were maybe always a little bit vulnerable at the back. This time, I don't necessarily fear if it's a tight, cagey game at Wembley. I think Sunderland can win this final lots of different ways, if that makes sense, whereas maybe in the past I didn't necessarily feel that.
No, I think if you're looking at from obviously Wickham's strengths, everyone, you know, associates them with the long ball sort of tactics and the way they play it. Yeah, to some extent, I agree with that. And you've got Sam Vokes up there, you know, I've played with and against Sam. He's a handful, he's a big strong boy. But you look at, we've got Bailey right there and Danny Bart, two experienced centre halves who you'd fancy him to be able to deal with him on the day. But it's what if Sam does start to bring the balls down, then it's those runners playing off him, you know, McCleary. They've got one or two other lads there who can be a threat in and around if they start playing in the final third. And, you know, I watched obviously their games in the semi-final against MK Dons, and I thought in the first game, MK Dons actually started quite well first 10, 15 minutes, started to try and get the passing game going, but then they smothered them. Wickham stopped them playing, started pressing them, turn it into a scrappy dogfight, and that suits them. Now, if you're looking at Wembley, and it comes down to what a lot of people say about the big pitch, and I've had a few discussions about this, and there's probably not a lot of difference in terms of the dimensions between the stadium light and other pitches, but it just feels bigger Wembley because of the size of the ground. It does feel, you know, the sun's
it's
out
got
there.
It's got that mystique to it. Like you say, I remember having this argument when Borough were there the other season, and actually, in pure dimensions, it's probably no different to
probably a foot or two
to any other pitch they're playing on all the season. But, you know, like hot, sunny Wembley day, the classic kind of playoff final, cup final day, it does feel different. And I think it will be harder for Wickham to impose what they want to do on Sunderland at Wembley. I just do.
And that's up to us to stop that happening in a way. I think if we start the game, I think first leg Sheffield Wednesday, that first half an hour or so, we were excellent. We moved the ball around the pitch well. The only thing that was lacking was another couple of goals. I think everyone will agree with that in that first leg. But if we start the game well down there, you know, everybody says start the game well. There's only one team really that can do that, isn't there? But if we get out the blocks, really get the sort of flair players into the game early on, out on the width, use the width of the pitch, then we'll cause them problems.
Yeah.
Looking more broadly at the season as to how Sunderland got here, Scott, do you think this is the best League One Sunderland have encountered during their time down here? I mean, it's been pretty dramatic at the top at times, Wigan and Rotherham doing their best as well to win and lose the title as well.
I think it's been the closest match. I think in other seasons there's maybe been one kind of standout team who you felt all the way through were probably the standout and were going to win it, and you could argue were, you know, a chunk better. I don't think that's been the case this time, because like you say, you know, for a while it looked like it was going to be Wigan and Rotherham, but they both had real sticky periods within that, and they had to dig in the end exceptionally deep to get the job done. And then the playoff pack beneath them was just a dogfight, wasn't it? Right through the second half of the season, really. I mean, you know, as Danny said, a team like Plymouth missing out, Oxford looked like they were going to be there for a while, just missed out. So I definitely think it's been the kind of closest match and probably the biggest spread of quality in the top 10 that it's been since Sunderland have been in the division.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think you look at the other team, I think Bolton were one of the best teams we played over the two games. You know, we only see a lot of teams over 180 minutes, don't we? But certainly, obviously, 6-0 defeat down there. But even at home, I think we've beaten 1-0, but they were off decent, weren't they?
Yeah.
Then you've got Ipswich, I think will be strong next season with McKenna coming in there as well. So yeah, it's one of those where we do need to get out of the league, yeah. really, don't we? It's going to be stronger again next season as well with the teams coming down from the Championship. But yeah, in terms of Wickham as well, they've had 8 clean sheets in the last 14. But I tend not to look at the league encounters really, you can do, but we've put 6 past them as well. So you know, I think Ross got 4 in those games. That's probably something what he'll be looking at is his team in terms of scoring those goals, won't it, going down there.
It can only help, you would think.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, going back to the second leg of their game, you know, I think MK Dons had 19 corners.
Yeah.
You know, peppered them, camped in their half, but they're strong, they're well organised, difficult to break down.
Yeah, we'll come on to Wickham soon enough, but we'll talk about the playoff games as to how Sunderland got to where they are in the final first. And they came through those 2 games against Sheffield Wednesday, and I think a neutral watching those games may have mistaken them for maybe Championship quality. They were that good, weren't they, Scott?
They were 2 very, very good games, yeah. I mean, you know, they were close games. I definitely think Sunderland were the better side over the 2 matches. I think that, you know, I struggle to see how any neutral would say that they didn't deserve to edge it. But there were games where one slip up, you know, at a crucial stage, could have made the difference. And again, as you know, as Danny said, it really, in the whole of that 180 minutes, there was only really once that Sheffield Wednesday were able to unlock Sunderland, and it was the result of a fabulous pass from Bannon, really, which, you know, he always looked like the one Sheffield Wednesday player who was capable of doing something like that, and it's probably to Sunderland's credit that he only actually managed to do it once, and obviously they scored the goal from it. So I think Sunderland can take an awful lot from those 2 matches, because they had to dig deep, they had to show resilience, but then also in that second leg they also had to show that little bit of class that they have got, and that you would like to think hopefully might make the difference at the weekend.
No, I agree. Yeah, I think in the first leg, I expected more from Sheffield Wednesday. I'm not sure they knew how to approach the game, really. Yeah. They sort of sat off, allowed us to pass out from the back into midfield. And I think the only thing from that first leg is, yes, we had the clean sheet, but we didn't score more goals. That was the only worry, wasn't it,
going down to Hillsborough
in that second leg. And they did show a little bit more. They pressed us higher in the second leg. We had a few nervy moments with balls dropping in and around the 18-yard box. But stood strong. A couple of war wounds. Bailey Wright cuts there. Yeah. Lyndon Gooch. And you have to do that. You have to dig in. You know, you're not going to go down there and have it all your own way. But the main thing was to come from that game is just the way we reacted for me. Yes, we've got a good experience through the spine of the team, as you've mentioned, Scott. And just the younger lads who obviously chipped in as well. You know, Jack Clark, arguably his best game, I thought, for the club. Mm-hmm. And then Patrick coming in off that far side, you know, switched on, gets across his man. And puts the game to bed. The confidence from the boys there to react and to respond after going that goal down, I think, was vital.
Because it did feel, you know, the atmosphere definitely lifted at Hillsborough when that goal went in. You did sit there and think, goodness me, this is going to be a tough 10 minutes now. And it was to Sunderland's credit that they managed that period really well, I thought. They kept the ball.
Yes.
Which, because quite often what you do in that stage is you panic and it just keeps going back to them. And that's where the problems come. Whereas actually, I thought Corey Evans in particular kind of said, no, give me it here. I'm just going to get it. I'm going to pop it off. We're going to keep the ball. We're going to take the sting out of this.
Yeah, and as you mentioned there, Bannon, it was that one ball he put through, but over the course of the 2 legs, kept him relatively quiet. I remember obviously doing the comms in the first game and he was tracking back at left back, and I said, when they've got Barry Bannon there,
that's where you want
the game. Yeah, you know you're doing something right when he's having to fill in at left back. So no, I thought we kept him quiet for most of the tie, really, and obviously that showed.
Who do you think have been Sunderland's most important players to emerge in the last few months? You've mentioned probably a couple, Corey Evans, Bailey Wright. At the back, the goalkeeper, Anthony Patterson.
Yeah, so Anthony Patterson's been a bit of a revelation, hasn't he? You know, obviously kind of got his chance when the whole Notts County loan ended with the whole COVID situation and everything, and found himself in the team. Alex Neil's obviously decided to stick with him, and he's been absolutely excellent in terms of, I think, you know, the little bits that we'd seen of him, we probably knew he was a pretty good shot stopper. What's impressed me is that he's just seemed so mature in terms of collecting crosses, positioning, barking out instructions when he's needed to. So, I think he's been an important player. Clearly, the relationship between Wright and Danny Barth in front of him has been important. You know, Sunderland have kind of been looking for a defensive system that works for part of the season. Obviously, you know, Callum's come in and done really, really well. But I think clearly Alex just, you know, felt that he needed to come out when he did, and it probably says a lot for the way that Bailey and Danny Barth have been playing that he hasn't really been able to get back in, because they've, you know, they have formed a dominant partnership there. And then I would come back to Corey Evans, because I think in tight games he's played a really important job in front of that back four. I mean, you know, I know if you speak to Alex Neil about him, Alex Neil will say the key thing with Corey Evans is he's just in the right place. And it, while that might sound a very simplistic thing to say, Daniel know better than me, but the best players aren't they? They don't have to go scrambling around because they're in the right place. And that's been important, I think, in this unbeaten run, certainly, that in the few occasions, as I say, Hillsborough being one of them, where Sunderland either were coming under pressure or could have done, I think he's played an important role in taking the sting out of that.
Yeah, just in that role, putting fires out, really, isn't it? It sort of goes unnoticed at times with the fans. I go back to my time playing, Dean Whitehead was pretty similar, just sat in front of the back four, gets around those little 10-15 yard balls which he cuts out and then just ticks it over. And I think Corey's been excellent in recent weeks doing that. And at times as well, he does get forward. He's had a few efforts, hasn't he? I think he hit the post down at Lincoln, one or two. Chipped in with a goal as well at home. But he's standing up in recent weeks, I think. And it goes back to that experience, really. You've mentioned at the back, we've chopped it between a back three and a back four at times.
Yeah.
That's obviously with injuries. Unfortunately, Carl Winchester's picked up his injury. I thought he'd been excellent this season playing at right back. Mm-hmm. But then you've mentioned it there, Scott. You bring in your experience. You've got Bailey Wright and Danny Bart, really. Been excellent in recent weeks, and then you build the sort of team around there
from there.
You go in there, you've got Corey ahead with the experience, Pritchard, who's been in and out with injury, and Nathan Broadhead as well.
But as
we've gone back to it there, if we can get these lads all fit, and it gives Alex Neil a little bit of a headache, which is a good thing in terms of picking the 11 for Saturday afternoon.
Moving through the side as well, at the top end of the field, you've had Ross Stewart, who's had a season what people would probably hope for but weren't expecting as well.
That was literally just what I was going to say, that ultimately as well, you can't leave Ross out of it, because, you know, he obviously had that little period towards the end of the season where he didn't score so many, and Nathan kind of came in and scored some really important goals and almost took the headlines. But then when push came to shove, you know, back in the playoff games and everything, Ross still was there, wasn't he? You know, he was the one who stepped up in that first leg, and he's going to be important at the weekend. There clearly is a good chance that Nathan Broderick could be fit and playing in the side, either along top with him or pulling off to the left where he has played on a number of occasions. But you still look at it and think, well, if Sunderland are going to win this, there's every chance that Ross Stewart's going to be the one who scores a goal to do it.
And of course, Danny, when it gets to the crunch end of the season as well, in the manager's counting bodies, it's someone like Lyndon Gooch you call upon, and to be honest, he's played some of his best games in the Sunderland shirt towards the end of the season. Yeah.
Cambridge game was the one that sticks out, I think. You know, ball after ball, he's putting quality into the box, really. And, you know, Lyndon's got that in his locker. It's just the consistency. But in recent weeks, as you say, and what I like about Lyndon, if he's not on his game, he puts a shift in. You know, he'll work up and down. If he's asked to play at right back, he'll do a job, and not too many go past him 1v1.
Yeah.
You know, he's small, he's got that push off, he's got 10 yards acceleration, and at the other end of the pitch, and he goes for 90 minutes as well. And you've seen it again, the Sheffield Wednesday game, clash of heads there, blood everywhere, but he gets on with it and got through it for the team, really. And these are the types of players you need as well. Throughout the course of 90 minutes, I'm sure, what we'll see down at Wembley.
And, of course, Patrick Roberts got the goal in over at Hillsborough, didn't he, Scott, to take us through to Wembley. You've seen him play in close quarters as well. Just how technical is he as a player?
Oh, he's a good footballer. I mean, obviously, I watched him at Borough as well when he was on loan there. And, he's always had a really high level of technical ability. I think at Borough, he was kind of feeling his way back into things. He'd had the Celtic loan. He'd gone back to City. He hadn't really been able to bed in there. And I remember there was a game. He played at Borough the season when they were scrambling to stay up under Neil Warnock. Neil Warnock came in with about, I don't know, maybe 8 games left to save them, if you like. And it was an away game that Robert scored with about 10 minutes left, cutting in. What stood out there, and to a certain degree has stood out with Sunderland as well, is having the bravery in a tight situation in a game to say, no, give me the ball, I'm going to take a risk, I'm going to try and do something here. Because, you know, you talk about bravery on a football pitch and you think of clash of heads and blood everywhere, and yeah, there is that, but quite often the bravest thing a creative player can do is say, no, give me the ball, I'm going to try and make something happen here. And I think that is one of Patrick's biggest strengths.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, as you say, there are different ways, isn't there? And it's taking the ball when things aren't quite going at the pitch. If you're getting forced back, it's the players who want to take the ball under pressure. And I think Jack done it as well at Hillsborough last Monday. He was dropping deep at times. I think sometimes you think, not in your own half, but he doesn't panic. He just dribbled. He won a couple of free kicks, didn't he, dancing through a few. And Patrick on that right-hand side as well. I know fans have questioned why do we play inverted wingers, you know, on the opposite side of their stronger feet? But you can see they like to come inside and get involved and try and get those shots off.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult at times when we play against teams who sit in a low block, really pack it out around the edge of the box, which Wickham will do, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Skips past one, but then the next player's coming onto him and he can't quite get that yard, isn't it? You know, but they keep on going and you're just waiting for, you know, as the game wears on, if the Wickham players are tiring, that opening might come about. Can he just slot one into to Ross Stewart's feet or Alex Pritchard's feet and get the opening for the goal?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Danny, but I think the only unchanged side, which Alex Neil's named, was in the playoffs,
wasn't it?
Do you expect it to be similar to that side? Or do you think it'd be something like Nathan Vorde coming
in? Well, that's the one for me. I think if Nathan's fit, he perhaps determines what the starting 11 is. Does he play, as Scott says, they're changing formation? Does he go two up top, you know? A 4-4-2 or 3-5-2 with Nathan playing up there alongside Ross, or does he play him off arguably the left hand side, but then it's tinkering the formation, and are you looking at Jack Clark coming out the team? So there's a lot of bodies in that final third. What we've got, you know, you've got Elliot Embleton in there as well, there's other players who can play in those roles, so you're looking at four or five positions, but we've got five or six players competing for those places as well. But certainly for me, and I'm sure a lot of fans would agree, if Nathan's fit and declares himself fully fit, he's got to start.
Having said that though, Scott, we've seen on many occasions, especially towards the end of this season, how important the bench has been to Alex Neil as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, it is difficult to second guess Alex, because as you say, apart from that game, he has made changes, and some of them have not been necessarily ones that you were expecting straight away. Having said that though, I'd be surprised if he changed the defence with it having been so solid in those two legs of the semi-final. I think Corey Evans and Luke both start. So I think if there are changes, I agree with Danny, it would probably be because he wants to get Nathan back in the starting side. I think that would be probably the only tweak, assuming, of course, everyone's fit and well, which, fingers crossed, we hope they are.
Okay, then let's turn our attention now to Wickham then. They've announced some news this week. We know that Sam Vokes has just agreed a new contract for them. It will be Adebayo Akinfenwa's final game as well at Wembley. And they're trying to get around about 20,000 fans, we understand, to attend, which will, of course, be overshadowed by the huge amount of Sunderland fans, which have already got tickets for them. But, you know, we've played them twice this season already, Scott. We won 3-1 at home. Then there was that game in January, 3-3, wasn't
it?
In two late goals, one for each side. And, you know how we think Wickham will play. We've seen how Wickham play all season. We've seen how they played against MK Dons in the playoffs. But is that how they're going to play in Wembley?
I think it will be, yeah, because it's pretty much how they've played since Ainsworth's been there, really, isn't it? You know, they know what their strengths are. It's the strengths that got them up. It's the strengths that nearly kept them in the Championship, to be fair to them. They only went down on the last day of the season, didn't they? So, you know, they made a decent fist of trying to stay there, given the limitations of the budget, certainly at Championship level. So I'd be very, very surprised if we see anything radically different from them at the weekend. Like I said, you know, they know what they're good at. They're very well organised. They're very defensively solid. As Danny said, they give, you know, pretty much nothing away from set pieces. They're very hard to break down. Fairly direct in terms of their attack, and an awful lot goes through Vokes, whether it's him holding the ball up to bring the others in or looking to hit him if he's peeling off towards a back post. So I don't think there'll be any surprises, but knowing what they're going to do and stopping it are two different things, aren't they? And, you know, they do have certainly a physical threat that Sunderland are going to have to show that they can cope with. Now, early in the first half of the season, I think you can definitely cite games where Sunderland weren't able to cope with teams with that kind of a physical threat. That hasn't been the case under Alex Neil. Clearly, the hope is that it's not the case at the weekend either.
And of course, Danny, Gareth Ainsworth has won this actual game before, hasn't he? He's been promoted by winning the playoffs.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think he'll play it down. I think if you ask both managers, they'll have an idea of how they think the game will go. You know, and fans as well, I think, will expect Sunderland to have the majority of possession. Mm-hmm. They'll sit deep. They'll try and nick the ball, play it up to Sam Vokes, and they get the runners off him. Hogan, McCleary, Mometi, if he's fit. And players who are technical players who can cause you problems on the counter-attack. And, you know, they've got to where they are, come down from the Championship last season. He's already had them up before, as you say. And I think he just plays things down a little bit. You know, I think the chairman made a few comments during the week, didn't he, about referring to us as the Netflix team. And they're just happy to almost play second fiddle and thinking, you know, Sunderland are the big team coming down there. They'll have the majority of the crowd in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, quietly, you know, behind his rock and roll image with his unbuttoned shirt, he's quite a character. He knows what he's doing. He gets them organised, as we said there. They're difficult to beat. 8 clean sheets in their last 14 games. But they're happy to soak it up and try and hit us on the counter-attack. We got to make sure we're organised when the ball's turned over. We've seen it earlier in the season. We got caught a few times, didn't we, on the counter. But make sure we're well organised back on that halfway line if they do manage to nick the ball.
Now, Scott, there's been a couple of developments in the last couple of days. Really interesting. Simon Hooper's going to be the referee, a Premier League referee. Yeah. You wouldn't expect anything less, I don't think, for a final. But also VAR.
Yeah.
Now, it's Sunderland's first ever game using all VAR.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, before we get into it, bogged down in it, what's your general view on VAR, Scott, as a football fan?
My general view is that I'm fairly positive about the use of technology. I think that they're still feeling the way around how best to use it, and there are Premier League games this season, certainly that I've been at, where it just takes far too long and fans don't have a clue in the stadium what's going on, and that's not a good look for any sport if the people who are actually paying to be there aren't kept in the loop as well as people watching at home say, then that's just not right. So I think there's issues with the way that it's used, but in the general argument of do I think technology should be used to help referees get decisions right, then I'd say yes.
Right, ex-professional Danny Collins, your opinion?
On VAR in general, it frustrates me watching, you know, obviously watch a lot of Premier League games and they still can't get it right there. You know, you're watching every game really, there seems to be an incident. And as Scott's mentioned, I'll watch games and I'll see an incident on the replay and I think straight away, that's a penalty or it's not. But it frustrates when they have about 10, 12 looks at it. Then they've got to decide if the referee in the booth back at Stockley Park needs to speak to the ref to advise him to go and have a look at his monitor. It sort of undermines the ref for me in a way
it's
sometimes.
It's still coming down to someone's opinion, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like his opinion against his opinion. Well, he's the referee. He's seen it, you know, firsthand, probably close to the action. Then it goes to another guy who's watching the game on a TV miles away. And I don't know. I'm not sure. I think it is there's a concept there which could work, but they're still
teething issues.
Still
teething
issues,
that's right,
trying to get around it.
It's been a mixed bag, hasn't it, in the last couple of seasons. There's been incidents in the Premier League where it has worked as it's meant to, you know, very glaring errors that have been put right. But as Danny says, there's then an awful lot of grey areas in and around it that you think, well, is this actually helping the situation?
It worries me as well. That is it the first League One game that it's being used for? I'm not sure if they're going to be double busy with it as well. You know, the little jostling ones you get off corners where lads are, you know, toing and throwing, a little bit of his shirt here and there. Are they going to pick up on things like that? A lot of fans I've heard yesterday, obviously it's come about the news, saying, oh, I think it's a good thing because Wickham are a physical team. But what if Ross Stewart goes through and he's a toenail offside and they pull it back? It could have been the decide. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's all ifs and buts.
It is.
I like goal line technology. I've got no problems with that. It's a goal or it's not. That's easy to get by. But VAR, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, that was going to be the next bit of the conversation, what you just mentioned there. Some Sunderland fans are suggesting that the style of player that Wickham play, it would favour Sunderland to have VAR involved.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the argument. I know what you mean, that they are more physical and they probably do lean on you and they probably pull you around a bit at set pieces and things. I mean, I'm not sure whether that, you know, in quotes, low-level stuff will get picked up, because it generally doesn't at the way that VAR is used at Premier League level. Clearly, off-the-ball stuff that will occasionally go on lower down the leagues that is just completely missed.
Well, something in the last game, Josh Windass stood on Luke O'Neill's foot, during the game, stuff like that.
That's fine, I get that. If they go back to that, ref's missed it, and he's only got one set of eyes at the end of the day and can't see everything, so not an issue if he can go back, and he probably would have got, was it probably a red card really for stamping on Luke O'Neill's foot?
Quite possibly.
I'm just thinking there, maybe one incident, the goal at Wickham was at the second one, that in-swinging corner, there's a lot of bodies around. I didn't think it was a foul. I know fans are saying, but I just think he's in his way. The striker's within his rights to stand
to
there.
To do that.
It's up to Anthony Patterson to try and manoeuvre his way around to go and try and punch the ball.
It would have been looked at.
Maybe looked at. It's what little incidents like that, which perhaps might come into play.
Danny, you've still got friends in the game, obviously at the top level as well. Are they briefed upon possible VAR situations when they're training and when they're preparing for games?
A lot of pre-season game, in pre-season, the referees come in and they'll address, they'll go through presentations on the board, go through certain things, and you know, stipulations, what they believe they understand for VAR, obviously, once it comes down to the game.
It will be interesting to see whether that's happened this week. I honestly don't know. It'll be something that Alex will get asked, I'm sure, in his press conference before the game. You know, has there been that kind of visit from the authorities to say, look, we know you haven't used this before. This is the scenarios where this will definitely be used. This is what you need to be aware of. I would suspect it probably has, but it'll be interesting to find that out this week.
Yeah, maybe one for you to ask in the press conference.
It will be, yeah.
Just a word on Alex Neil then. He came in after the transfer window. You know, he had to use the cards he was dealt with at Sunderland, and you can't deny the record he's had. You know, that's just that one defeat.
He's done fantastically. I don't think anyone, 15 games unbeaten run at the end of a season when the pressure is absolutely on is fantastic at any level of football. And like you say, it's only amplified by the fact that then, you know, they're not, in quotation marks, his players. They're the players that he's inherited, and he's pretty quickly worked out a style that works for them and a number of different systems, to be fair, because he hasn't been wedded to just the one, has he? That, you know, there's been system changes and personnel changes, but he's found a way to make it work. He's clearly also developed a really strong bond within that dressing room. You could see that towards the end of the season. You could see it certainly after the final whistle down at Hillsborough, and you know that's clearly very important. I think one of the big things with Alex Neil this weekend will be as well that, you know, Danny alluded to it there with the whole kind of Wickham chairman, and you know there's going to be up to 50,000 Sunderland fans. It's quite easy to get lost in amongst all of that and caught up in all that. Alex Neil will not for one second. He will see this as a football match where he will send 11 players out, and it's his job to get the tactics right so they beat the other 11 players at the other end of the pitch. No more, no less. And, you know, you can argue as a fan whether that's the attitude you want your manager to have or not. I think it's the attitude that probably will work in this game, though. And I think that, you know, he will take the whole circus out of it, won't he?
Yeah, I think he wants to take the pressure off the players, as you say there, you know. Just listening to his press conference yesterday, he's almost coming across as it's just another game. Deep down, he's probably feeling a lot more than that. I've heard a few fans this week saying he's almost similar in a way to Roy Keane. Obviously, you said you've been covering the club since 2004, so you know Roy from your time. Yeah. I obviously played for Roy.
Yeah.
Not that he ever goes on about.
The similarities I see, I think when it's time to work, when it's time to get on with it, you know, they want things doing right around the place. But, you know, he's just walked past us 5 minutes ago. He's having a laugh and a joke. Yeah. He seems relaxed. Roy was like that as well, behind the scenes, on the bus, in the game of cards. Do you see him as quite similar characteristics?
I think there are similar characteristics. Yeah. Definitely, there's clearly an intensity there. There are standards that both managers have expected to get filled.
Yeah.
I do find it interesting with Alex. I think some managers can put on a bit of a show and pretend that they don't really care about a lot of the kind of external or the bigger picture stuff or whatever. And actually, when you do a little bit of digging, you know that they do care. It's just a bit of a deflection tactic. I don't get that with Alex. I think he genuinely doesn't really care about a lot of the kind of external stuff, the background noise, you know,
the journalists,
throws in there, I mean, you know, as fans, all of that is part of being a football fan, and I wouldn't want fans to lose that, but there is definitely an argument that a manager is actually strengthened by ignoring all of that and saying, do you know what, that's not in my remit, I can't do anything to change that, so just forget about it. And it certainly seems to have worked for Alex Neil up to this point.
Yeah, I think as well, just wondering, we were chatting, weren't we, after the game last Monday, in which way we would work it with having 12 days in between, having a couple of days, I think he said, didn't he, time to switch off on football, go and see the family.
Yeah.
Then they've been, I think they had the weekend off as well, and they've been back in the last couple of days, full sort of normal week build up, and he's trying to keep it as normal as he can.
Yeah.
I was wondering, are they going to go down maybe Thursday and have a look at Wembley, get down there? But I think he thinks the opposite way, just try and keep it normal,
just go down as normal on a Friday. Yeah.
And just keep it normal so the lads aren't getting too worked up and that nervous energy doesn't filter through them, I think.
Yeah, and there's lots of, I mean, you know, like you say, I've seen different managers do completely different things here and at Middlesbrough and at Newcastle ahead of really big games, you know, in terms of, it's kind of each to their own, but I do feel this time with the, you know, again, this is a very journalistic thing, but fans will see it as well. There is baggage. There is baggage. You know, Sunderland have lost playoffs. They have failed to get out of this league in the last three seasons. So from a fan's point of view, and really from our point of view, writing about it and telling the story and the narrative, etc., it's there. But Alex Neil, I think, has found a way to say, do you know what? It's not there as far as I'm concerned. I couldn't care less about it.
To deflect it. It's nothing to do with us. It's not this group of players. It's not me. I've just come in and this is where we're at type thing, isn't it? Yeah, no, I get that as well. And I was thinking in terms of the crowd size as well. We're expecting 50-odd thousand down there. Will the lads, you know, come out there, big pitch, big, you know, stadiums, 50-odd thousand. Will they get a little bit of stage fright? But just thinking back throughout the season, we've had 30-odd thousand in the stadium alight, so it's that pressure, that intensity through the crowd as well. So they'll probably be used to it more than the Wickham lads, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I think so. And again, I think Alex Neil will know how to manage that. You know, he's had Norwich there. He was obviously managed them when they won there against Middlesbrough. Yeah. You know, I think... The good thing about it is it's kind of, we've been talking about it all week. It's not going to come as a surprise, is it? He knows what they're going to be walking out into. So, I have absolute confidence that he'll have the players exactly where he wants them come Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, and you don't think there's going to be any kind of surprise formations or starting lineups or anything like that?
Well, I'd be less confident saying absolutely not with Alex Neil than certain other managers, but I'd be surprised.
Because he does look at the opposition.
I was going to say, because of the opposition.
He doesn't just pick an 11 at 2.
To the opposition, definitely.
So how to work then? You know, they've gone back to a back four recently, 4-4-2 more often than not. I think your standard 4-4-2. So he'll look at that. I think Mooney and think,
which is why I think he'll probably keep the four that we've seen in the two playoff games. And then, like I say, I think the central midfield probably picks itself. So I think the only change will be a judgment call on Nathan's fitness and where he wants to play him.
So you expect Sunderland to have the majority of the ball then?
I'd imagine so, yeah. I did actually have a look back at the, as geeky as I am, I had a look back at the two games in the season, and it was quite close in the game. Which one was it now? Was it the
3-3
one?
3-3
at their place. Yeah, there wasn't too much in it, I don't think. At home, obviously, we had a lot more. They actually started quite well at our place. Do you remember? They had a couple of chances early on.
Yeah,
but we came through that one and the game opened up and suited us, and that's what we'll need down at Wembley, I think. But yeah, you'd expect us to have the majority of possession, but again, it's what we do with it. We've seen it a few times through the season where teams have come up to the stadium alight. Fleetwood rings a bell, one or two others after that, but teams that were down there struggling, Gillingham, where we've needed late goals to get through games. It's that breaking teams down in that final third and that little bit of quality and knows how to do it.
Yeah.
When you've got Nathan Broadhead, Alex Pritchard, Embleton, Roberts, Clark, these players at that top end of the pitch, then we're more than capable of doing it.
So then, Scott, is this the time that Sunderland finally start to move their way back through the Football League pyramid then?
I really don't want to jinx this, but I've been, you know, obviously I've been speaking to a load of Sunderland fans who are going down and, you know, is this the year, etc.
Will they have a better opportunity?
I think there's no reason why it shouldn't be, is there? They're in good form.
Yeah.
They're in good momentum. They've got pretty much an injury-free squad, or as near to it as you're ever probably going to get at this stage of the season. They're playing opponents that, while they have strengths, you know, you don't look at them and be really fearful of what they can do to you in any kind of stage of the pitch. So, you know, there's going to be 50,000 Sunderland fans in there. Everything is set up. But as we know, this is football. This is Sunderland. Who knows? But, yeah, you know, it feels like, if not now, then when?
Yeah. One thing I mentioned as well, Scott, you said, how will they hurt us? And one thing I've just come up with me is that set plays. That obviously, Jacobson's got a lovely left peg on him, in swinging corners from that right-hand side. But we get, remember, throughout the season, we tend to give some daft free kicks away at times. Go back to the Oxford game. Mm-hmm. They scored a good goal, didn't they, that free kick later. But we give 5-10 daft little free kicks away. You've got to cut that out against teams like this. Don't invite pressure into your own
box.
And
that is a good point, because, you know, that is probably the way that they will be looking to build pressure, isn't it? To like you say, get that ball in the box from corners, from free kicks in wide positions, etc.
I'd imagine that's what he works on a lot in training. Set plays, you know, free kicks. Corners coming in.
Because all things being equal, if Sunderland have the ball and are able to dominate possession, in which we you know, kind of hope and envisage that they can, then they should then be able to dictate the tempo of the game, which is what you would want from a Sunderland perspective. And the easiest way for Wickham to break that up is through stoppages, set plays, breaking the rhythm up.
Another interesting thing I've looked at as well is, it was talked about, and obviously with ourselves in recruitment, is ages of squads, and Wickham actually got the oldest squad, and they're 29.4 is the average age.
Right, how much does that will affect them this time of the season? You know, it's possibly going to be a red hot day down there, in London.
Yeah. Big pitch again comes into it, and it, you know, it does come into it, but then you look and then you think, I think Wigan and Rotherham had two of the older squads as well.
There's so pros and cons, you know, really it's like you say, there's the physical element, but then there's the mental element and the experience
as well. I was going to say, that's that nervous energy that comes into it. You know, as a player, I used to get, like, I'd say it's match day nerves in your stomach, and you're driving to the ground, the fans are there, you're on that coach. Once you're out there, for me, once you've got your kit on, you're out there warming up, it goes away.
Yeah.
But I'm sure once they come out the tunnel, that roar goes up behind the goal, that'll come through there again, really.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But it goes back to what we've seen at the Stadium of Light. Again, we've discussed it throughout the season, is giving the fans something to go off. Start the game well, 50-odd thousand fans, get them onside early on. If we don't start well, if they nick an early goal, the atmosphere could die quite quick, couldn't it? So we've got to get the fans on side early on.
Yeah.
And what's it like for you down there as part of the media, Scott? Is it still pretty special to visit Wembley? And
Yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah, it really is. I mean, I also have done quite a lot of the England stuff. So I was at the games at the Euros last summer, which were kind of fantastic. And, you know, to be able to experience that and get kind of caught up in all of that was brilliant. But it still kind of means a bit more when you know that there's 50,000 down there from the northeast, and it's a, you know, a northeast club trying to do it. It definitely does, and you know, we've got supplements to write and everything this week, so that kind of gets the excitement flowing, and then head down on Friday and pop along to Trafalgar Square and Covent Garden and take some pictures and see what's going on there, and then you know, the game on Saturday. So the whole weekend is great. It's it still gets the butterflies going. Yeah, definitely.
And Danny, you obviously remained in the northeast after finishing your football career. Yeah. How much are you looking forward to going down, just as a fan more than anything?
Yeah, I've been down there myself a couple of times. Obviously, Wales against England and cup final for Stoke against Man City. Lost 1-0 on both those occasions, so I don't want to be a jinx down there. But no, listen, I'm looking forward to it. I just hope the amount of fans going down there, and unfortunately, last year we were in the Papa John's where the fans weren't allowed down there to celebrate it.
Well, that's it. The hoodoo's broken.
But, yeah.
Yeah, and that's it. And I think that's why it does kind of feel a little special that this has come around so soon afterwards, because, you know, it was really strange reporting on that last year, because you knew that it was massive, and you knew it was Sunderland winning something, and you knew that there was kind of hundreds of thousands of fans back on Weir side and all around the northeast going mad about it. And yet, you were still kind of watching it a little bit, thinking this just doesn't feel right. This isn't what it's meant to be, you know what I mean? Yeah. So the chance to get right back down there the following season and hopefully kind of put that right, it makes it feel a bit more special, I think.
Yeah, and I think obviously the prize, it's classed as a cup final, really, isn't it? But it's not the silverware we're after, it's getting back to the championship.
Exactly.
And giving 50-odd thousand fans a happy journey home, I think.
Now, I'm not suggesting you are betting men, but if you were, you had to put a prediction on it. Scott, what you're saying?
I'm going to go Sunderland to take the lead, Wickham to equalise in about the 78th minute, with fears of classic Sunderland, here we go again, but then Sunderland to win it in extra time. So I'm going 2-1 after extra time.
My nerves already.
Long shift.
Absolutely shot with the thought of that. Danny, what are you thinking?
I am going to go Sunderland to Wickham 0.
You think 2-0?
Yeah, I called
by 90 minutes.
I got the semi-finals Bob on, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah.
That's good.
I
then
got that right. But no, I'm 90 minutes. I'm going to go Sunderland to Wickham 0.
Well, thanks for the chat this afternoon, chaps. Hopefully, we'll be in good spirits after the final whistle down at Wembley. And to all Sunderland fans who are travelling down, maybe listening to this on their journeys right now, safe journey, and we'll see you soon.